Welcome to Empire Building, the podcast where we talk about building big businesses and even bigger lives. I'm your co-host, Sarah Reynolds.
I'm Seychelle Van Poole.
I'm Wendy Papazian.
I'm Via Williams. Today, we are going to go through our top books of 2020. There were so many lessons this year, so many lessons and so many great books. And I think for me, why this is such an important topic is that I have read more books this year than I think I've read in the last 5 years. And I've done a combination this year of paper, you know, reading paper and Audible. And I, you know, there's an argument for both, but for me, Audible's been a huge blessing because it's enabled me to get more content in. And what I do, and I guess my hack to anybody is if you have a lot of time where you can listen to Audible, and then go back and read a book if it really mm-hmm. speaks to you and you feel like you need to process it visually, right? And kind of write in the margins and that kind of a thing. So I think the format here is we all chose our top three. There's some overlap, but we all chose our top three for the year. They didn't have to be written this year. These are books that we read this year, and we're going to walk through our lessons, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. So who wants to go first?
Well, I can jump in. I'm actually going to start with a non-business book. I don't know if anybody else
I love that.
Has a novel.
I have one too,
on my list. But the reason I chose this one was that I'm a big reader. My goal is always to read 3 books a month. So typically I read about 36 books in a year. And when the pandemic hit, for whatever reason, my brain was kind of paralyzed, or maybe it was just because I was working so much. I had a really, really hard time reading. I would pick up a book and I just couldn't read it. Mm-hmm. And so this book is the novel that like knocked me back into reading. It's called Recursion. Kind of a weird word. It's R-E-C-U-R-S-I-O-N, and it's by Blake Crouch. Mm. And it's just a really fun thriller. I actually sent out multiple copies to different friends of mine. A total page turner about time, about identity, about memory, kind of a little bit of a mind, mess with your mind kind of book. And it just really got me back into reading and just a really fun page turner. So I'm just going to thank you for getting me back, kicking me out of the pandemic and back into the real world.
Hey, Wendy, before you go to your other ones, I just want to reinforce that I go through phases like that too. I think a lot of people do, where mm-hmm. for whatever reason, I just go through reading. Maybe it's called a binge phase. I don't know. But where I kind of get out of the habit for a while. And I totally know what you mean about a book kickstarting you back in.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm on the personal side. One that I love to read memoirs or about history. And I don't know why, but I think maybe it's because it's my grandparents' generation, but World War II just fascinates me. Like, I just think it impacted so much of the world. And there were so many different countries and generations and just pieces that played into that. And so one that I just finished reading and I really appreciated was, it's called The Splendid and the Vile. It's by Eric Larson. And it's a saga.
Winston Churchill, right?
Yeah, it's a saga of Churchill, Churchill family, and the defiance during the Blitz over England. And it is written from the perspective of they went through all of Churchill's diaries. Mm. They went through John Colville, who was basically his undersecretary and took all the notes of all the meetings, and actually kept a really robust personal diary as well. And like all of his cabinet, all of his people, his references is almost as thick as the book is, because he poured over thousands. It's called The Splendid and the Vile.
What a great title.
And it's by Eric Larson. And it's not like, as Wendy just said, right? She just had a page turner. This one is like pretty detailed, but I just found it fascinating. Learning all these little personal details about Churchill that I didn't know. I mean, did you know he like took baths and had meetings while he would like take a bath?
Yes.
And like people would just sit in the bathtub with, in the bathroom with him while he's just like naked taking a bath. I don't know. That is obviously not the
goals.
Point.
Yeah, do you know what else he did?
Not the point of the book, but I mean, it was just like, wow, these leaders that we put up on these pedestals all have these like eccentric, quirks that we all have, and just how it all played together and just the lessons of, defiance. And no matter what your reality is, right, your mindset and resolve to succeed, to succeed can matter above everything else. And that's really when Churchill had no allies helping him. he still had the resolve that America was going to work it out. And like, it really shows how hard he had to try to bring America to his aid. And I don't know, it really inspired me in a time when we are winning a pandemic ourselves, of what it takes to get through it.
Do you guys know my mom? You know, my mom's British. You guys know mm-hmm. she's British, but she was born in 1940. She was from East London, very poor part of
London.
She was born in 1940, and they sent the kids and the moms away to the country.
Yes.
And then she came back, and when she was a toddler, they would play in the rubble of all the bombs from the Blitz. And she would tell stories of going in bomb shelters. She would tell stories of the doodle bugs where they would be really loud. You'd hear the planes and you're wondering, mm-hmm. is it going to get our street? And then there'd be silence. And they knew when there was silence, they had dropped the doodle bugs had dropped the bombs mm-hmm. and they were waiting for the explosion.
Yeah.
And everyone would pray. No one would say a word. Then you'd hear it go off and you go, it's not us.
Not us.
Essentially.
Wow.
And then the next day, the kid they'd play in the rubble, and they called it rubble.
Yeah.
And they would play in the rubble. And there are stories of Winston Churchill standing mm-hmm. on roofs.
Yes, on
shooting,
his roof. Yep.
Shooting guns at those, you know, enemy planes. I can't
wait. And his daughter was like one of the top machine gun, like Mary, his youngest daughter,
didn't know
the top machine gun women.
Wow.
That actually became quite well known for her bravery, because she would be up on the rooftop shooting out, and was like super ticked during World War II when she was like 17 when it broke out that she couldn't get engaged earlier. Yeah, Via, you have to read it.
Wow.
It was so good. And they detail like how many incendiaries were dropped, or the doodle bugs were dropped over each flyover. And
it for me was just one of those really good.
If you're a history person and you like, you know, learning about those sorts of things, that was a really good one.
I might get it for my mom too. So before we get into, I know we have a lot of business books. Can I give one of mine, because it's in this vein? Mm-hmm. It's not like a hardcore mm-hmm. business book, and I feel like we're going to get into that in a bit. But it's a book called Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday, one of my faves. He's not only a favorite author, he's kind of one of my favorite thought leaders. He's got the Stoics Journal and a bunch of things, but the context was the pandemic started February 29th in Kirkland, Washington. The first COVID case hit the U.S., my hometown. Not just Seattle, Kirkland, my hometown. Mm-hmm. And I went on the trip of a lifetime, really a bucket list for a really big birthday I had this year. And I was in the Maldives, and a pin drop in the middle of the Indian Ocean. If you Google it, it is nothing, you know, nothing in the scale of this world.
You were near
literally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, literally, I would buy the Seychelles.
Mm-hmm. You were near my people.
All the Seychelles. And I turned my phone off for 48 hours, which is a big deal for me.
Yeah.
So we had Wi-Fi there. And it was a big birthday, and you know, it was tempting. I knew I'd get a dopamine hit just getting all the texts and the wonderful things, right? And I turned my phone off and I read that book. I was with just my husband and I, and spent a ton of time in stillness. And so the book is kind of broken down into three parts: mind, soul, and body. And it's essentially, you know, what the directives are and thoughts on achieving stillness in each place. Mm. And I think that the big takeaway, and I do encourage you to read the book, if you're maybe an expert in that field, this might be a little bit basic for you. For most of us, though, it's a good book to kind of slow you down a little bit. Mm. But I think that one of the biggest takeaways I got is this: stillness isn't escapism. So it was kind of the concept of distinguishing escapism from true purposeful stillness. Mm. And really the difference is the intention behind it. Mm. You know, so there's a lot of people that kind of operate in a lot of escapism that's actually not stillness. They're not content. They're not working on the right things. They're not, you know, they're not being purposeful about the work. Mm. And so I really recommend it. And before we get into the hardcore business books, I think that this is kind of the personal section of the whole list. So
that's good.
So how did you know that to say that before I had my first one, Via? You knew it was going to be more business oriented.
And mine are too.
We know, Sarah.
You're totally judging me, okay?
No, mine are too, Sarah. It's okay.
I know. Well, mine, it's personal and of course, business oriented, but I have read it multiple times this year and studied it, Tax-Free Wealth.
Such a good book.
It by Tom Wheelwright.
Yes.
And it has been, so the concepts are different. So the biggest thing for me from the book is just understanding how our government sets up tax benefits and the benefit of them in terms of, you know, we think it's sort of our American duty, or this is across the country, this is across the world, not just America, to pay taxes, right? But it actually they set up tax benefits for helping achieve what they're wanting us as a country to achieve, right? So just that whole concept of why taxes are there and what you can do to do what the government is needing, basically. And then at the same time, you get tax write-offs. And it was a big deal for me just because I grew up, my grandparents were like blue-collar workers, amazing in terms of savings and things like that. And my dad's a pastor, hasn't made, you know, tons of money in ministry, obviously. And then my mom got into real estate. And thankfully, through Keller Williams and through real estate, I've learned more about money. And my family doesn't know a ton about money, big money when I say money. Mm-hmm. And I've struggled with this sort of new thing of even having money and what to do with it. And what are the wise things? I believe in being a good steward, and to whom much is given, much is required, and making sure that we're using it in the best way. So that's been a really big book for me this year, and read it multiple times. So
Sarah, I saw Tom Wheelwright speak for about 90 minutes last year. And I agree. My takeaway was that tax laws are designed to sort of socially engineer and stimulate certain sectors. Yeah. I didn't look at it that way. So if you're getting a tax break on, you know, buying a commercial building, it's because they want you to get that tax break on buying a commercial building. Mm-hmm. They want you to buy the commercial building. And it's a total paradigm shift from, yes, I'm not shirking on my obligation. I'm actually being engineered in a way that helps everybody. So,
yes. Yeah. It's been a big one for me this year. So, not as fun as y'all's. I mean, I'm
that's a good from your books. That's a good book. It's a really good book.
Yeah. Fun is in the eye of the reader.
It's true.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah. Well, the next two books, I read a lot of books about money. I thought a lot about money during the pandemic. Obviously, we're all worried about money. A lot of people lost their jobs. The economy is kind of going in the tank. And probably my next favorite book that I read was called The Psychology of Money. It's probably the best book on money that I've ever read, if I'm honest. It's by Morgan Housel. And the book begins with a hotel worker talking about a guest that came into the hotel. And the guest comes into the hotel and he's got a really fancy car and he's not being very nice. And he orders someone at the hotel to go down to the local, what do you call it? Like, not like thrift store, but
convenience store?
Like a pawn shop. Sorry, guys. Pawn shop. A little brain fart there. So to go to the pawn shop, he gives him the hotel concierge a big stack of money and says, go and buy as many gold coins as you can at this pawn shop. And so the concierge comes back, gives this guy a bunch of coins. And the next thing you see this guy doing is he walks out to the edge of this pier and he starts just throwing these coins into the water. This is a man that's obviously very, very wealthy, just throwing his coins into the water. And then the story kind of evolves and he talks about later how this guy eventually, who was very wealthy, ended up losing all his money, declaring bankruptcy, and basically just what you would expect from somebody who has that attitude around money. And that's how the book starts. And it's really the premise of the book is that we all have different, what makes money so interesting is that we all have different ideas around the psychology of money. We all have different thoughts and feelings about it. When we actually feel that money is more like a science, you know, when we think of money, we think of like, oh, it's numbers and it's science. Mm-hmm. But really, so many of our financial choices are emotional, right?
Yeah.
Which I thought was a big aha for me because like we think about it as science, but really so much of what we do is how we manage it, how we invest it, how we make business decisions are not mathematical calculations.
Yeah.
They're really decisions that were based on the way we grew up. So that was super interesting. Love and then that. Some of the highlights from that book were they talk about Ronald Reed. Some of you might have heard of him. He was a janitor who, and like a gas station attendant who ended up amassing $8 million in the stock market on a janitor salary. And he died and gave away $6 million to some charitable things and then $2 million to his family. And my takeaway from that was that we all wanted to be like Ronald after he died, but probably most of us don't want to be like Ronald right. when he's living, which is yeah. you know, really frugal, this kind of like buy and hold strategy, mm-hmm. Long-term investing. And then there's lots of other like good stories about human psychology in there. So it's just a really, really different way of looking at finances and how our experiences shape our decisions. And then there's just lots of really good stories in there. So highly recommend.
Awesome.
I love that.
As a leader, it can be lonely. You're ready to grow and you realize you need the right community to get you there. With Empire Circle, you'll be surrounded by driven, adventurous women who want more in business and in life. You'll get real-time feedback, personalized guidance, and honest advice from seasoned leaders who have built businesses and net worths in the hundreds of millions, all while living their big lives. If this sounds like the fuel you need to level up your business and your life, Empire Circle is absolutely for you. You can get more information at herbestlife.com by clicking on Empire Circle. Come and let's build your empire together.
You have another one about money too, right?
I do. Yeah. I got another one about money and it's by J.L. Collins. I actually read it two times this year. It's called The Simple Path to Wealth. Yeah. And I don't typically read a lot of books more than once. But The Simple Path to Wealth is really about financial freedom. And it's really about the stock market. And he takes a very complicated, I think it's very hard as an author to take something complicated and make it very simple.
Yes.
And that's what J.L. Yes. Collins does with the stock market. And he just really talks about, you know, it's along the same lines of the psychology of money and the Ronald Reed story, and that by investing early, right? Watching your expenses, being frugal, mm-hmm. Playing the long-term game, yeah. you can look up and in a certain point in your life, you're financially free. Mm-hmm. And which is what a lot of people are going towards. But one of the things one of the books mentions is that we have what's weird about someone who looks rich versus someone who's wealthy. Like I view someone who's wealthy as someone who has assets, but they're not necessarily showy in their spending. Mm. But the models that we see, the things that we see around us about money is really about people's richness, right? And he talks about how if somebody pulls up in a $100,000 Lamborghini, you think they're rich. Yeah, you make an assumption about about their wealth. But all we know is that they're $100,000 poorer than before they
bought
their car.
Because that drove off the lot.
Yeah. So it's just like, if you want to have a big life, right? And if mm-hmm. you want to have a big business, same thing. You need to, kind of start early, watch your expenses, don't go crazy with anything. And then you can look up and you basically can have whatever you want. So those were both really awesome books for me.
Love that.
Well, I have a book, one of my top threes on money. Feels like a good time to jump in since we're on a theme. And it's called, and it's very recent for me, and I will read it again. Very rare for me also, Wendy, to read a book again. It's called The Wealthy Code by George Anton. I don't know, A-N-T-O-N-E. And here's what I'll caveat it. You know, a lot of you guys, especially our regular listeners, know that I'm on my own journey with money, just, you know, like anyone is. And I've made a lot of money and I haven't always made the wisest decisions. And I'm extremely committed to the path that I'm on right now to build my net worth. And so the caveat is, this is probably a basic book for some of you, but for me, it is perfect. I've never had a book go through definitions and lay it out so simply. And what the basic premise is rich, definition of rich is having a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Definition of wealth is having enough passive income to fund your life. That comes mm-hmm. first. Nothing wrong mm-hmm. with being rich, but the wealth comes first. And so you can be rich and wealthy, which would be great. And he goes into, there's kind of three primary tenets that you need to focus on. You know, number one is appreciation assets. Number two is cash flow assets. And then number three is how you're going to get your income. And that's really the formula to becoming wealthy. And so
what's cool about the book is, you know, I'll admit it openly. Like, I've struggled with these like cash on cash returns at 5%, and I nod my head and act like, you know, this actually, like, I actually understand it now. I actually understand what a loan constant is, what a spread is, what, you know, oh, it's a formula. Awesome. Like, I need to make my, you know, interest rate lower than my cash flow return.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, it's one of those books that it's like, it's amazing. It just lays it all out and gives all the definitions. I have notes in the margin. I have underlines. I have notes in my iPhone from it. It's almost like a textbook, but it's written, you know, pretty well. And it's not a fancy book. Like, when I got it, someone recommended it to me. I was like, is this the right one? It looks like he self-published it. Like, so I'm just prepping you. Like, it's not it's not graphically designed, but it's just been, one of the best books of the year.
Well, love that.
I'd love to just make a comment on that, Via, that your wealth building journey is pretty new, right? Mm-hmm, past couple years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And so what I want our listeners to understand is that if you don't know what cash on cash return is, or if some of the things that we're saying don't sound, you know, sound alien to you,
yeah,
then you too can go on a journey. And in as little as a year or 2 years, you can have an understanding of money and the stock market and things like that. And it's not something for everyone else. It's not something for your spouse to deal with, or your CPA or your bookkeeper. It is a journey that you can go on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to read 10 books a month. You can read one book a month and look up in 2 years and really know a lot.
And also, but I like to go. Your income is.
Yeah.
You know, that you learn from a janitor, you learn from a, you know, that's what's so powerful about these books is like, you know, you can see yourself in all of these different positions in terms of income, and there's still a path for building wealth and learning about it. And I love that about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like too that what you're hearing from each of us is we go deep onto subjects. It's not that we just like read a book on one subject one time and we don't read about it again. I think that the theme that you're hearing is that, you know, we did a whole episode around knowing your numbers and money. So if you haven't listened to that one, you should. And the lesson I want you to take out from hearing everybody talk about books about money is that it's a journey. It's something that we're constantly working to add to our knowledge and deepen our understanding, because what you focus on expands. And when you can focus on, you know, where your money is going, I can guarantee you it's going to go more places that you want it to go.
That's right.
My next book is Business. And Sarah and I think both had this one on our list, is The 12-Week Year by Brian Moran and Michael Lennington. And I'm going to be honest, I always felt like every year we get ready for our annual business planning. Every year, like all of this energy goes into it. And we spend all this time and all this work creating this annual plan. And then, you know, like in March, the pandemic hits. And I was so ticked. And right? And before that,
getting really worked up about
it. I am really worked up about it. This book I am passionate about.
You guys can't see her, but I mean, her like face is getting red. She's like, got a really mean Seychelles look.
Like, she does not like yearly business planning. Yeah,
it's true. I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a sham because, you know, like we did this whole business planning last October as a team. It was awesome. And by January, my entire team looked completely different. And then on top of that, we start rebuilding and we're remargining our business and everything. And then a freaking pandemic hits. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, what's the point of a business plan?
What's the Mike Tyson quote? You make plans until someone punches you in the face. I got that wrong. What is it?
That is my year. That is my year, Via Williams.
And that's ironic because Mike Tyson is someone who made millions and millions of dollars and ended up bankrupt.
And he also lost it.
Because he was throwing his gold coins in the water. Basically.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. And so what I like about the 12-week year is it basically takes, yes, you still are creating an annual plan. I don't get to get rid of that and I'm not planning on it. And what I like about it is it breaks it down into more bite-sizable chunks of 12-week sprints. And actually, our whole team is implementing it. And basically, the goal is to put the pressure every 12 weeks on accomplishing your goal for the 12 weeks so that you don't look up, I don't know, in month 3 and have a completely different year, like a pandemic that punched you in the face. Or I think what a lot of people do is they wait until October or November of the year that they're in to accomplish their goals. And they look up and say, shoot, I have to like triple time it coming into the holidays because I'm so far behind my goals because I wasn't paying attention. So yes. I'm loving this book. Our team is loving it. It puts a lot of support and focus and structure around it. So if you're someone that maybe it has some strong feelings about annual business planning this year, like I might, maybe it will be so some good
starting a support group. You'll be able to find the information in the show notes.
Yeah, leave us a comment and a review about our support group, and we'll come find you and we'll have it.
Okay, Seychelles, you know, the quote is really quick, Sarah, before you go in here. It's everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Yes. Punch in the mouth.
You said it like Mike Tyson does.
Yes.
Yeah. I like punching in the face.
I like punching the face. Yeah.
Yes.
Until I get punched in the mouth. Holyfield. Yes.
No, 12-week year was on my list too. And unlike Seychelles, I will lead the planning, loving business planning group because, and that shows the power of this book.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's actually my favorite time of the year is what we're in right now, which is like big planning. But what I love about the 12-week year, what I loved about it, and my entire leadership team has loved it as well, is we like deadlines.
Yes.
And a year is a long deadline. Like a traditional year is totally a long deadline. And what has been great is and we've always looked at quarterly numbers and things like that, right. But treating 12 weeks like a true year where you have in making sure that your team is hitting the numbers that they need to hit and each person's hitting the numbers that they need to hit and having that deadline is so, so powerful. I also loved in the book how it's very, very simple.
Yeah.
Like he talks about weekly accountability meetings. They call them WAMs. And he goes on and on about these meetings and it's like super simple, but it's like he does such a great way of explaining just the power of it and 15
how you do 15 it.
Minutes. Yeah. How you do it. Exactly. So that was on my list too. 12 week year. And then I also am looking at all his material. He has like a field guide, things like that. So
really cool. Okay. My third one is a very popular book, which you're probably going to say I'm late to the party on, but there you go. It's called The Road Less Stupid by Keith Cunningham. And I just thought it was absolutely brilliant, outstanding. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to the concept of thinking time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, creating space in our day to not have demands on our time and to just be able to think out the problems and the big stuff. Noticing a theme, by the way, stillness is a key. Gee, Via needed to not blow and go. I love quoting Wendy, the blow and go. Via needed to slow down. What a shocker. But it's great. He kind of goes into core disciplines of thinking. And I think that what I liked about the book is there's so many focusing questions. And it's really a book based on a premise of focusing questions and thinking time. And I loved it. And it's filled with anecdotes and stories. It is superb. And just a little plug for Audible. This was a great book to listen to on Audible. And I think it's a good book where I then went back and I Googled some summaries and I sort of like, because there's so much content, I did end up kind of typing up notes from various summaries because I listened to it. So I don't know, I'm torn. He's such a good narrator. I loved listening to it, but I could see someone wanting to read this and write in the margin and take notes.
So yeah, that one was a read for me. I really liked
that. I get that.
That's a good
being able to
one.
Anchor that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good one to put, to read, pause, think on, read
it
again.
Is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's it's sure. Super powerful. That was on my list this year too.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, mine too. Good. It's such a good one.
Who has any left?
I have one more, I think.
Go ahead, Sarah. Yeah, go ahead.
So this book actually was our whole theme of 2019 for our team. And I picked it up again recently and I'm getting a theme right now. I hadn't read a lot of books multiple times, but recently I'm going back to some that just are really grounding books. But it's called Remarkable. And it's by Dr. Randy Ross and David Salyers. It is a phenomenal book for leadership. It's a phenomenal book for being a team and showing your value. And so like their sort of tagline is maximizing results through value creation. The one part, and so I wanted to read it again. My number one strength on Strength Finders is competition. And it's both an awesome thing. It also can like eat you alive. when you're so competitively leaning. And I just love when he talks about competition and how to look at competition and how if there is no competition, if you're constantly looking at how to create more value, Mm-hmm. How to create more value for your customer, how to create more value for your team. It's a pretty easy read, I would say, but just a phenomenal one. And it's also just a great theme. If you like to have a theme for your year, it's a great theme mm-hmm. on that because your team can go all in on it.
I love that.
That's awesome. My final one is Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott. And it's one that I read when in my mid-20s. When I was really needing help learning how to have productive conversations. And I reread it again this year because I think this year required a lot of communication, like we talked about on another episode. It required a lot of vulnerability and it required a lot of tough conversations and honest conversations. And so I reread it for tools. But I mean, you know, if I were to sum up this book in one sentence, it would be, right, relationships succeed or fail slowly and then suddenly, one conversation at a time.
Yeah.
And it can either be one conversation had or one conversation missed. And that for me has been pivotal in working to help keep healthy relationships in my life that I want to keep. And also evaluating maybe where some have failed and parts that I need to own in that relationship to move that forward in communication. And so it's been a really good refresher for me on a skill set that I think is really key when you're in the middle of tough times.
Another one with that goes along with that, and mm-hmm. say we're like on the same wavelength today. Yeah,
yes.
Is Fierce Leadership.
I love that
leadership
book.
Is also mm-hmm. phenomenal too. So I deleted it because I was trying to do the top three, but I was like, that's a good one.
It's Fierce a good, Leadership. Yeah, yes. It's a really good one. Can I give you a funny one that we were talking about before we hopped on? So, you know, homeschooling is awesome. And so Quinn and I have been trying to find levity in books that we're reading. It's so great. I'm so like
affirmation.
I am great at homeschooling. That is an absolute affirmation and probably not the truth.
my affirmation is I'm not going to mess up my daughter too much in one year.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree with you on that. So at bedtime, Quinn found this book. We're still at my in-laws up in Michigan right now. And we found this book in the shelf that's called Why My Kid Is Crying. And it's this picture book with little statements down below of toddlers losing it and then the reason why they're losing it. And if you need a good belly chuckle laugh, it is chock full of 150 reasons why toddlers absolutely lose it. And if you're listening to this and you're a parent, you will completely resonate. So if you need a good chuckle, Quinn thinks it's hysterical. And we've been enjoying that one.
So that's a good segue to tell everybody that all of the books we talked about, including that one, we will put in the show notes. So if you're driving, you don't have to worry, although we want you to listen to us over and over again, but you don't have to. We're going to put them all in the show notes. And I think that, you know, as we kind of summarize our top books of the year, something that I can't remember which one of you said, but I think you can start to hear that what we focus on is what we're probably reading and we're probably getting the most out of it. Wendy and I are both kind of in the sink right now. We're reading a lot of money books, together. Like I'm reading one of the ones she referred to me. I hope you go read The Wealthy Code, Wendy. I can hear you guys, Seychelle.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
I put some in my Amazon cart from you guys on this. That's good.
I know, right? And I can hear Seychelle and Sarah. There's a lot of crossover there. So whatever we're focused on, we're probably reading more about. And so I'll end with the focusing question that I think all of our listeners can ask yourself. And it's, if you've identified something as a priority, where are you spending your time? Are you spending your time reading about it and learning it and studying it and trying to get better at it and trying to be a master at it? And so that's probably the biggest takeaway from this list is our thought process behind it and the lessons we're learning and the reasons we're reading them. The list itself, you know, some of them might jump in and speak to you and some might, but I think the biggest takeaway is that we're reading what we're deeply committed to learning more about.
Love that.
Yep.
Yeah. So with that said,
It's the end of 2020. You guys, you guys get to create your 2021.
Right.
You get to create your best life.
That's right.
So figure out those books that are going to correspond with that in 2021.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So we'll put the list. It's all going to be in show notes. Have a great day, you guys. Thank you for listening. And thanks for being an empire builder with us.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening to Empire Building. If you like what you heard, join our tribe by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform and help us spread the word by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Until next time, wishing you a life worth living. And remember, you are an empire builder.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.